There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk and a lot to talk about this hour. The first half, something we have never done before on the show, something brand new, something that I'm ashamed that I haven't done before just for self-serving reasons, is to have somebody on to give us an idea, possibly the gold we have hiding in the old hi-fi cabinet there in the boxes, the old peach boxes there full of vinyl. Wherever you stash your vinyl, you've been holding on to it because you know one day that's going to be worth some big money. Well, is it? Because we're joined by John Marshall, Mighty John, the record guy, to tell us more about that. Hey, John, thanks for being on.
Hey, Sean, great to be with you.
And first of all, I gotta ask you this. Set it up. How the heck do you get to being a vinyl authority? How do you decide you're going to do that with your life?
Well, the short story is, I grew up across the street from a jukebox distributor, and when they were done with the records in the jukeboxes, they'd sell them for a nickel a piece in the store, and I'd buy them, never realizing at the time they'd be worth money. Then I got a book on record collecting for my 25th birthday. And then, of all things, I went to work for Stephen King. And,
oh, wow.
Doing research for him. And one day we were in his office, and he's sitting in his chair rolling over the records he's got on the floor as he blasts his stereo. And I said to him one day, I said, you know, hey, you just ran over a record that's worth $100. And he said, what are you talking about? And I told him about the big money that people have in their records, but they have no idea. And he said, well, you know, somebody should tell them. And I said, you know, that's not a bad idea. So about 20 years ago, I put together my website and started doing radio and TV interviews, letting others know what I've known for a long time, and that's potential big money in their records.
Okay, at the prompting of Stephen King, you got into this business.
Yes.
It's great. What a great what a Genesis story here. Great. It's okay, so let's talk about this, because we are going to get, I already have people like lining up here to get values on it. But in general, this idea, is it nostalgia, rarity, or what is it that's driving the price of vinyl up?
Well, why do people collect anything? But keep in mind that most of the money in vinyl is in five categories: rock and roll, country, blues, soul, and jazz. Those are the big five. Certainly rock and roll is the most collectible category. And the Elvis era, the Beatles era, tend to be where most of the money right now is going to be found. That doesn't mean all of it, but certainly most of it.
Now, when you look at this and say, okay, something's worth, usually as a collectible, is worth more than something else because of scarcity. Is that true in vinyl?
Well, rarity has a lot to do with it. The collectibility of the recording artist, the type of music. Just because a record artist is popular doesn't necessarily mean they're collectible. But something is only worth what somebody else is willing to spend. And about 1980, I got together with a fellow that wrote that book. I got on record collecting, and we started tracking record auctions and sales. And when we started putting out our first price guide, there was like 100,000 listings, and now we have over 1 million listings of what these things are worth.
Wow. From 1980 to now, with inflation factored in, is vinyl worth more? Obviously, there's a bunch of different, but is it worth more than it was then?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
A lot of collectors are in it, not just because they love the music. They're looking for it as an investment potential.
Okay, so I got to ask you about what things are worth. You said rock and roll, the biggest category.
Yeah, overall rock and roll, but within rock and roll, there are subcategories such as doo-wop, rockabilly, surf music, British Invasion, Motown. They all fall into that big umbrella of rock and roll.
Well, this fits perfectly, because I'll pick this text first. So Thomas wants to know, anyway, if you're just joining us, talking to John Marshall, Mighty John, the record guy, who can give you all an instant value on any record you have in your collection from 1902 to present day, so you can text it in or call it in. Thomas says he has some Elvis records from the 50s on 45, and they have the Sun label, Sun Records label.
Yeah. There are five individual ones on the Sun record label, whether on a 45 or 78. They came in both versions on Sun, each worth up to at least $1,000.
Say what?
Say each of those Sun 45s worth up to $1,000.
Wow.
And we always say a record is worth up to, because condition is very important.
Yeah, what about that? You know, in collectible things, you always see they do it as a percentages out of 100 or something. This is an 80%, a 90%. I mean, yeah. Is that true in vinyl?
Yeah, use a basic scale of 1 to 10. When you know the 10 is the mint value, kind of zero in on what the particular value of your record is.
Okay.
The best way to grade a record is to pretend that you are the buyer and not the seller, and that way you'll grade it more fairly.
So do they have to be unplayed? I mean, to be 100%, 100% is a new in box 100% unplayed, or can you have something that was played once or twice, it's in good shape?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And keeping a record still sealed is not a good idea, because if you do, you run the risk of the record inside pressing against the cover and leaving that circular impression on the cover, which will ruin the value of the cover, which is half the value.
Now, I'm learning new things about every 35 seconds here, John. Okay. And people can hop on, too, with their questions, although I'm getting a lot of them in text at 343-0106. Ben says, my mother-in-law has an original vinyl of Michael Jackson's Off the Wall, well-preserved. What's the ballpark price on it?
Well, Michael does have some very valuable records. Off the Wall is not among the biggies. It would be up to around $30 to $40.
Okay. Now, then you said country was also a big category for vinyl.
Well, yeah, most of it's going to be, early country.
Oh, this is. Get ready. Porter Wagoner, Porter Wagoner, Loretta Lynn, Hank Snow, Eddie Arnold, and the Porter Wagoner gang, the Chuck Wagon gang, Grandpa Jones, etc. on vinyl. What are they worth?
Well, it sounds like it's got a compilation album with individual songs by individual recording artists. If that's the case, that's not too collectible. Porter Wagoner by himself is not too collectible. Certainly Loretta Lynn, her first couple of albums can go for $100. Her first 45, like I'm a Honky Tonk Girl, could go up to $300 to $400. I can't remember the other artists that were on there, but generally she's the one that comes to mind. Dolly Parton, who was with Porter Wagoner for years, her first 45 was called Puppy Love, and that's currently up to $1,000.
What about that with, you talking about that compilation not being worth as much, is something where you have something unusual? This artist is performing on this other artist's album, or something like that. Do those kind of things increase value? That kind of
No, not necessarily.
Okay. And how important is it, too, for people to complete sets? You hear a lot of that in collecting, whatever it is. They've got to have this whatever it is they're collecting, because they need just one more in this set. Does that happen in the world of vinyl?
Well, it does, but I don't think record collectors really look for it as complete sets. They're looking for what's worth money, whether it completes a set or not.
Hey, okay, I got a couple more here. Let me go to the personal stack. And a little later in the rock and roll world, Talking Heads 77.
Yeah, you have it on Sire Records. Do you know the
mm-hmm.
label?
Yes.
They're 12-inch records that are 12-inch singles. They can sell up to around $75, but their albums are not big collectibles, $10 to $15 at most.
What about autographs? Because I have David Byrne's autograph. Before I did talk radio, I did 2 decades in rock and roll radio, and I got David Byrne's autograph on there, not to me, but just David Byrne.
An autograph on a record could actually hurt the value of the record.
I knew it! I've screwed that up.
Anytime you alter a collectible from the way it originally came out, you can hurt the value, and it originally did not come with an autograph.
Right.
Now, the autograph may be worth more than the record, but it will not add to the value of the record itself. We always tell people, if you have a chance to have an artist sign an autograph, have them sign a separate slip of paper and then just stick it inside the cover.
All right. I want to ask this one before we run to the break, because I see some people had some Beatles questions, but you had put on your website here, there's a Beatles album that's worth $15,000.
Yeah, that's the Yesterday and Today album, showing the Beatles dressed as butchers on the cover. known as the famous Butcher cover. Original stereo copies are up to $15,000.
Oh, I bet you there are people digging very, very quickly in their stacks. We're coming right back, and hopefully we've hit on one, but we've got a stack more to talk about here. People asking questions, what their vinyl's worth. You can text those in or call them in to 343-0106, 343-0106. Ask John Marshall, Mighty John, the records guy. You can go to the website and check out more. We link that through on the Twitter feed. It's moneymusic.com, and we'll be right back. We got the message.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 118 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. It's a lot of fun. Good to have John Marshall on the show for the first time, but not the last time. John, the Mighty Records guy, and giving us an idea what value, what gold we may have in vinyl form in our own home. And we're talking about collectibles out there. And once again, if people want to get more information, if they don't get their question answered on the show today, they can go to your website or pick up the guide. How do they do that?
Yeah, website is moneymusic.com. We do put out a CD that you pop into your computer, and you can look up the values for over a million records. It's called Mighty John's Record Appraisal Guide. It's right on the homepage at moneymusic.com.
Okay. So you mentioned Beatles worth $15,000. Let's stay in the United Kingdom. Stones. I'm definitely a bigger Stones and Beatles guy. So there's a Rolling Stones 45 that's worth $18,000.
1968, the 45, Street Fighting Man. The
Love
value up to $18,000 if you have the picture sleeve. The picture sleeves for the 45s are always worth more than the record itself. In this case, the record's worth out to about $10, but the picture sleeve is up to $18,000.
Holy cow! I mean, because at that point, you're talking at your invisible art, right? I mean, people are really, the collectors are buying it for the artwork.
Well, in this particular case, 1968, there were riots in the street at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, and Mayor Daley of Chicago forbid Chicago radio stations from playing that song in fear it would create more riots. But the song was not meant to be identified with those particular riots, but it came to be. And the picture sleeve, which shows the cops and protesters fighting with each other, is very rare. As we speak, I only know of 12 that have been found, but we don't know how many were issued in all. But that's why it's so very collectible.
That has to be a problem with it, right? If you don't have, if you're trying to say there's only so many, you would have to have that information from when they made the records. How many could exist?
Well, they were trying to protect the clean-cut image of the Rolling Stone.
Right.
And when the reaction was so strong, the record company just decided, you know, why add fuel to the fire? So not too many of the sleeves got out.
So Bob Dylan's coming to town here in a couple months, doing another gig here in Mobile, and you have on your list Bob Dylan vinyl and Bob Dylan album worth $20,000. Which one's that?
That's the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan. He was going to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show and sing a song called Talkin' John Burt Society Blues. And the producers of the Sullivan Show said, wait, this is kind of libelous. We don't want you to sing it. They called Columbia Records complaining about it, and Columbia agreed that it was libelous. So they were pressing albums in anticipation of Dylan's appearance, and they said, whoa, stop the presses. So if you have a copy of Freewheelin', and on it is the song Talkin' John Burt Society Blues, then it's up to $20,000.
Holy cow. John, okay, a stack of them here from our listeners. This one's going to be interesting because, of course, Mobile, the hometown of Jimmy Buffett. So there's a lot of people that may have early Jimmy Buffett vinyl. He says, have many Jimmy Buffett albums, early albums, rough values on Jimmy Buffett vinyl.
Well, I'm trying to think of the Jimmy Buffett 45 off the top of my head that's worth some money. Overall, not too collectible, but like anything else, there are exceptions to every rule. And I'm kind of looking at my catalog right now because I know there was one particular album, and he's coming to town here where I am. So
well, very cool.
I'll be looking for him. But I'm not going to have him sign anything because that could hurt the value.
But, you know, that's and maybe think through my vinyl collection over the years in radio, all the signatures that may make them worth something as a you said an autograph, but just not to a collector of vinyl.
The 45 I was trying to think of was called Abandoned on Tuesday by Jimmy Buffett, and that's up to $500. Havana Daydreaming can be, if some of the copies on Havana Daydreaming mistakenly play a track that says, please take your drunken 15-year-old daughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a copy of that song, yes.
That can go up, well, the album will go up to about $150.
Which we have to play that. I don't know if I could. I can't play that whole song on the air. But
High Cumberland Jubilee on Barnaby Records is up to about 75.
Okay, so there's some value in the early Buffett in vinyl. What about okay? This is interesting. This is more the like you talked about with the artwork or the pictures you go with it. This one, American Graffiti soundtrack with Trifold, great artwork.
Yeah, well, sometimes the artwork will make a difference, but not all times. No, the set's only up to about $20.
Okay. Again, getting questions here, multiple questions about Lynyrd Skynyrd. So some Southern rock here. What about some Lynyrd Skynyrd vinyl?
Well, we get the most questions on Street Survivor by Lynyrd Skynyrd because before the plane crash, it shows the band in flames, and then after the plane crash, they reissued the album cover without the flames. But so many were sold before the recall that it is not a big collectible. It's only up to about $40. They do have a 45 called Michelle, which is their first 45, which will go up to about $1,500.
Wow. What about, let's go back here to the older days, and we had some questions about Sun Records early from Thomas. What about that? What Elvis single you say is worth the most money if somebody's looking through their collection?
Well, the most value for Elvis is a song called Good Luck Charm. This is on RCA. Number one record in 1962. Now, the regular 45 is worth up to about $40, but RCA also put it out as a 7-inch 33, which means it's the size of a 45, but it plays at the speed of an album. And so that 7-inch 33 of Good Luck Charm with its picture sleeve, certainly up to around $20,000.
$20,000?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, by the way, when you talk about this, okay, we're talking about, you're telling us, that, John, that this album's worth this album's worth that, but I've got to have a place where none of my neighbors are looking to pay me that much money for the album. How do I sell these?
Well, there are several things you can do. Hopefully you'll go to our website again, moneymusic.com. We do put out a directory of buyers, people listed by state who buy records. I always like to sell them face-to-face if possible. But, of course, you can sell them online. There are all kinds of places online to sell them. The two things to remember when you sell a record are, number one, what is the current market value? And number two, what did you pay for it originally? Considering those two factors, you're going to make an informed decision on whatever you accept.
As we look at, this is heartbreaking because after what you've already told us here, John, because Texter says, I have the Beatles, I Saw Her Standing There, I Want to Hold Your Hand single. Yep. My mom as a teenager wrote the names of the band members on the cover in pen.
Oh, well, it's a black and white picture sleeve. The record itself should be on an orange and yellow Capitol Records label, worth up to about $40. The picture sleeve had mom not written on it. Would be worth up to $100.
That's painful. That's painful. Youthful indiscretions with the pen and the album sleeve, just like I had people autograph stuff and lost money. Speaking of, you've told us what takes the value away from them. So if we're going to try to preserve what we have and make sure they're at prime shape for trading or selling or something like that, what's the best way to do that?
Well, moisture and heat are the big enemies. So you want to make sure you never keep them in the basement or the attic or the garage or in the trunk of the car. Room temperature, stand them up vertically like books on a shelf, not horizontally piled on top of one another. That's the best way to preserve them. And serious collectors get covers for the jackets and separate sleeves for the records and store them separately.
Right, because you told us at least, and I think we all can picture when you say that, John, that impression of the actual record on the sleeve.
Yes. I get a lot of people that inquire about, well, it's still sealed. I hate to break the seal. Well, first of all, many times we tell the value of a record by something printed on the label or the color of the label on the record, and of course we can't see it, we can't tell. And you can buy a machine for $100 and reshrink wrap any record you want, so just because it's still sealed does not make it a big collectible.
All right, this one, asking a question here for the, I don't know, the original Monkees album, or was there more than one? My Monkees knowledge is weak.
Well, the Monkees, and then the Monkees' second album on Cold Gems, C-O-L-G-E-M-S, each one up to about $100. The big one for the Monkees is The Birds, The Bees, and The Monkees. A mono copy will sell up to about $750.
Wow. Okay.
Don't monkey around with the Monkees.
That's right. I'm impressed. I was kind of, you know, flippant and dismissive of the Monkees, but the Monkees bring some money.
Yeah. Like they said in Dumb and Dumber, they were a big influence on the Beatles.
Classic line. All right. I'm going to ask you this. Let's go. And once again, people can go to your website. They can get the CD. They can do this valuation at their own homes. But, okay, one more. Okay, somebody asking for... Okay, we have one more. We're going to let one more through here, and then we'll ask it. Brandon is in Fairhope. You got to make it fast. You're on with Mighty John.
Hey, Mike. Hey, John. How you guys doing?
Yeah, we're good, man. Oh, we lose him. We lose him. Okay, go ahead and ask your question.
Are you here? Can you hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. Hey, I have a question. I have a bunch of vinyl records that my grandmother left me. I've got like Merle Haggard or Elvis, Jimmy Dean, the Poncho and Lefty album, and they're all in mint condition, and I'm told they're not worth nothing. I mean, and that just can't be possible.
Okay, that they're not worth anything. Well, okay, I appreciate that. We'll let John tackle that. John, he's been told they're not worth anything. Of course, you can clear that up through the website, I'm sure.
Well, I didn't hear what wasn't worth anything.
Poncho and Lefty album and some Merle Haggard, and he was told they're in mint condition, but he was told they weren't worth anything.
Yeah, Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard, well, they're worth something, but they're not big collectibles, maybe up to $10 a piece.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so before I let you go now, I got to ask you the one question. The most expensive album in the world, what is the Holy Grail?
Well, as far as albums, it's probably that Bob Dylan album. As far as 45s, it's a 45 from 1966. Record producer Frank Wilson from Motown, under the urging of Berry Gordy, recorded a song called Do I Love You, Indeed I Do. And he didn't want to record it, and Berry Gordy said, now that you've recorded it, I want you to go out and promote it. And he was very shy, didn't want to do it. They got in a big fight. Berry Gordy demanded all copies be destroyed. And, of course, not all copies were. So Do I Love You, Deed I Do, Frank Wilson on Soul Records, up to $40,000.
Holy cow. Mighty John the Records Guy, thanks for your time, and y'all check him out online, moneymusic.com. And we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Okay, well, let's switch gears here. 1 second. Let's go to the other cut. Although that Zeppelin's good. I wonder how collectible that Zeppelin would be.
Everywhere I
yeah. I sat here during the break and started, because I do have some Stones on vinyl at the house, and I said, do I have the limited jacket Street Fighting Man? And then no, I do not. But by the way, if you do have that limited edition Street Fighting Man, the Stones, that's $18,000, according to Mighty John. Yeah, listen, with all the people that work at the station that worked at rock and roll radio in the years past, we had a big, robust discussion on, you know, do we have enough to retire on stashed away somewhere in the house? Moneymusic.com, the name of that website, and go check out if you've got some gold there, some vinyl gold sitting in the house, which is pretty cool. That's the other great thing. I mean, one of the, well, gajillion great things about the internet. You know, something, he said it earlier, it's only worth what some people pay for it, right? I mean, that's true in anything. But if you have something that is very specific, like if you're selling a lawnmower, there's people all over the place that need a lawnmower. If you're selling a rare Rolling Stones single, not so many people. But with the internet, you can find that person that they just got to have it, right? Of course, that's what eBay and all those other places have brought together. It's interesting. I mean, something that you're looking at home, you go, I probably should. Have you done this before? Yeah, be frank with me. You're thinking about boxing something, throwing it out, right? You're thinking about getting rid of it. So you go online, you just Google or go to eBay or something and search, and something you were just about to round file, you see, oh, wow, that's worth some money. Although the problem is, then I don't get around to selling it. I just put it back in a box. And that I'll forget about it sometime, and then I'll remember, and I'll go, oh, before I throw this away, let me check, and I'll see it has value, and then I'll put it in a box, and then 5 years later, I'll remember it again, pull it out and do that. Story from the AJC. Just saw this Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Listen to this. Here's your talker going forward. Atlanta school removes the Pledge of Allegiance from their morning ritual. This is Atlanta Charter School. And once again, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, says an Atlanta Charter School will not recite the Pledge of Allegiance as part of its morning meeting agenda. Atlanta Neighborhood Charter School on Grant Street announced their change as of Tuesday on their elementary campus. The decision was made, quote, in an effort to begin our day as fully inclusive and connected community. In an effort to begin our day as a fully inclusive and connected community. What could be more connected and inclusive than saying the pledge? What could make everybody, hey, you're part of this. You're part of this community. You're part of this great republic. Quote here from the, campus, I guess they don't call them principals anymore. The elementary school campus president, Laura Zelsky, says, over the past couple of years, it's become increasingly obvious that more and more of our community were choosing not to stand or recite the pledge. Really, this is elementary school. This is elementary school. Says students will be given an opportunity to say the pledge at another point during the school day, and they will continue to be asked to stand to participate in the school's Wolf Pack chant, W-O-L-F, Wolf Pack chant, each morning. I guess they're the wolves I don't know. So they'll do the Wolf Pack chant, but they can't get them to do the pledge so much. Zelsky went on to say, teachers and the K-5 leadership team will be working with students to create a school pledge that we can say together at a morning meeting. All right. Where do I even start? We have the Pledge of Allegiance. It's already done. The ink's dry. It's worked quite well. I don't think it needs a remix. But they said they're going to work on creating a school pledge that they can say together in the morning. The pledge, she said, will focus on students' civic responsibility to their school, family, community, country, and our global society. You have got to be kidding me. It's not the Pledge of Allegiance to our global society. It is the Pledge of Allegiance to where anybody fill in the blank? Anybody? Is it global society? Is it school family? Is it a thing I pledge allegiance to the... Anybody? Anybody? We lost completely? Pledge allegiance to the... of the global community? Okay, put the story up on Twitter. I want you all to check it out in their own words. But when I saw this, I said, listen, does this mean it's happening? Quite often, here's the easy route somebody would take. They'd say, yeah, and that's happening everywhere. That's a specific story. But it is... It's beyond the pale. It's ridiculous. I mean, we're talking about elementary school. First of all, I should have known when Laura Zelsky, she wasn't the principal of the school. She's the elementary school campus president. And she now has the problem with this. She said, we just had too many students who wouldn't say the Pledge of Allegiance. They're in elementary school. Stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay? But she says, to make an effort, we're going to retool. They're going to put together their own pledge that they can recite there at the school. All right, grab some calls on this at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also grab your text on that same number. Reminder, too, you can get a podcast of this show, morning show, all our evening shows, weekend shows, all that on our website, fmtalk1065.com. When you go there, just click the tab for podcast, drop it down. You can get them a la carte there, or better yet, subscribe at iTunes for iPhone users, or at Stitcher for Android users, or even Spotify. You use that for your music? Well, you can catch our podcast on there as well. All right, let's go west, young men and women. Let's go west. Mike is in Mississippi. Hey, Mike.
Hello. Good day, Sean. Yeah, what I'm calling you about is the charter school situation. If you Google charter schools, and look it up, there's over 1,800 charter schools in the United States. and they are Muslim-based charter school system. Most of them are.
What?
And run and backed by the Turkey government or somebody thereabouts that is affiliated with another country and is backing a charter school system in the United States now.
What, where are you getting that from?
From Google itself. You Google charter schools, and it's based out of the main corporation thing is based out of Texas.
But you said they're Muslim schools.
Yeah, they teach Muslim beliefs in the system. That's what their primary goal is, to teach a Muslim.
Now, they had some relationship. I remember a story that CBS had done in the past that there's somebody out of Turkey or something. But was it? Are they teaching Islam there? I don't.
Yes.
Okay.
This is
news to me.
The criteria of the Muslim of the charter school system. Yes, it is. And
okay.
They're funded by there. And most of the people that's in with this, you'll have somebody that's kind of like an overseer of the school system itself, and that person will get 15% of the pay right off the top before any of the money goes to pay bills or anything else. This group is getting 15% right off the top.
Okay, I appreciate the call. I got to look into that. I had not heard that before. I remember it was an old story or something. There was some relationship, some Turkey or somewhere. I appreciate the call. I'm ignorant, so I can't tell you. I can't say anything other than I'll look into it. Let's go to David in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean, I'm going to get a little bit off topic here, but you were talking about the FM Talk 106.5 podcast just a second ago.
Yeah.
I use an app called CastBox, CastBox.
Okay.
And what it allows me to do is it allows me to download the FM Talk podcast into the app so I can play them in my car on my radio without using any of my data.
Okay, wait a second. Something you use when you're hooked up to Wi-Fi or something, and then
correct. If I can download them at home through my Wi-Fi connection, and then I can play the FM Talk 106.5 podcast, like Plain Gardening or
right.
Sip and Chew, without using any of my data.
Now you could, I guess you could do this. I mean, you do the same thing if you went to our Simplecast. You know, went through our website. You could download them there like that. But if you wanted to, trying to think if there's any other way. So it's you're using Cast like a. Like you cast a fishing line, cast box?
Yes, CAST box, all one word. And it's on the, I don't know if it's for iPhones because I don't have an iPhone. I have an Android phone. So it is on it is available on the Android platform. So you can actually download the podcast onto your phone. And even if you're up at the farm like Sean is on Washington County and you don't get cell phone range, if you download them over the Wi-Fi, you can sit there on your tractor listening to Sean Sullivan talk on the weekend,
right.
Catching up on the shows.
Well, I've caught up with all his shows, so I do listen to the other shows, though, when I have my earbuds in, which I do. I actually, you're correct. Usually earbuds are in when I'm on the tractor, so the distant whir, the close whir of a diesel engine seems distant through the podcast. Well, thanks. I did not know about CastBox. 146 FM Talk 106.5. News break on the way. We'll check in with our news partners at WKRG for the latest. Also, Dr. Bill calling for more of these thunderstorms this afternoon and a high. Now, if you're not in the rain in the 90s, if you are in the rain in the 80s.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Okay, just press the button and you never know what you hear, right? 152 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Tomorrow's Friday, right? Please help. Yeah, it is Friday. Paul Feinbaum show on the way in just about 8 minutes. Great event coming up tomorrow night at Cotton Chill Package. Another great event. They always have something to do on Fridays, sometimes on Thursdays. And really, you want to check out the humidor the craft beer selection, the fine wines, all that. Do that any time. But if you want to come out and have a little fun with your friends, taste some beers, and maybe win some prizes, you know, they do the spelling bee and all that kind of stuff. That's done in the back there. So you've got kind of a chill package up front with all the selections of beer and wine and spirits and cigars. And then in the back, it's the leather couches, the nice wood grain bar, the tables and everything where you can kind of hang out. So that's where they do the different features. Okay, so tomorrow night, if you want to check this out, here's how it works. They have different craft brewers come. They bring beer. They let you taste, you know, like a sip of the beer. And we're getting crazy here, just tasting a sip of something to see if you like it. And then if it tends to be something you like, then you know, okay, I want to buy more of this, or I don't like this other one. It really is a good way, before you spend the money on a six-pack of craft beer, to taste and see if that's something for you. Orpheus Brewing is doing the event tomorrow night from 6 to 8. So they're bringing, I think, five or six different beers for you to taste. They're Atlanta Tart Plum Saison, Serpent Bite Dry Hopped Golden Sour Ale, their Over and Over Pineapple Sour Ale, their Transmigration of Souls Double IPA, their Wandering Blues Blueberry Sour Ale, and some other surprises. We'll get to taste those, plus your chance to get swag from the brewer as well. Orpheus Brewing out of Atlanta, featured tomorrow night from 6 to 8. They're in the back of Cottage Hill Package. Go by and check it out. And who gets that gig? I don't know if it's the same people that come up with the beer. Wouldn't it be good? It looks like they have fun naming beers. The Transmigration of Souls Double IPA. I mean, does the person that brew it get to name it, or do they have like a naming department? I don't know how that works. Right. Okay. One more school story. One more school story. Then I got to get this story from Mobile Jail on. But just after be losing it there with the elementary school there in Atlanta, the charter school that says, hey, we're not going to say the pledge, but we are going to create our own pledge. And it talked about the global community, you know, the global community. You don't pledge allegiance to the global community. That's not an anti-global. It's just you pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of where? Anybody? Okay, another story, school story that just popped up here. Professors allowing, and we've heard this before, this is not brand new, but it's another iteration of it. Professors allowing students to pick their own grades. A literature class at Davidson College, which is a little liberal arts school. All right, some people from Mobile went to Davidson. Literature class at Davidson College this fall will use contract grading, allowing students to pick ahead of time their grade for the class and the workload they need to complete to earn it. So they get to say, I'm going to get an A in your class. And then they have to, I guess, live up to it. I don't want to get the Presbyterians mad, but isn't this like predetermination? The offer is posed by Professor Melissa Gonzalez for her Introduction to Spanish Literatures and Cultures course. And she is one of several professors across the nation who will allow you to pick your own grade method, build as a way to eliminate the student-professor power differential. Oh, good. And give students control over their education. But critics contend it's just another example of how colleges coddle students from the harsh realities of the real world, which includes competition and goal expectations. I would say this, if the contract grading, if the student says, I'm going to make an A in your class, and then if they say, okay, to do that, you have to do X, Y, and Z. I mean, it's just, to me, it sounds like the same thing, just in reverse. But yes, if it lets them say, I'm going to get A in your class and I'm only going to write you one paper to do it, well, then it's on the professor. But I think just, you know, it would be easy just to say, this story's ridiculous. If the professor would say, it's almost like bidding a contract, which could teach some things. If a student went in and said, I'm going to A plus on your in your class, and the professor says, okay, show me, you know, you have to earn that A plus. And this the student could almost lay out a business plan. Here is how I'm going to earn the A plus. And then the professor agrees to it and the student lives up to it. I kind of think that teaches a lot. But if it's, hey, you just kind of give yourself your own grade, well, no. All right. And before we run out of time, and I'm sure this will be a lot of the talk tomorrow. I saw the story, Andrea Ramey's story from MyNBC 15. It's a story from down at Mobile Metro Jail saying the inmates are treating the toilets there like a trash can. Now, I think we have the sheriff coming in next Tuesday. It says, but they were talking to Warden Trey Oliver. He said, they're flushing everything down the toilets. Inmates stuff things like, here you go, here's stuff in the toilet. Blankets, flip-flops, potato chip bags, sheets into the toilet down at Mobile Metro. How much does it cost taxpayers? Asked Andrew Ramey. Tens and tens of thousands of dollars every year, replied Oliver. There are 57 pages of work orders for plumbing problems alone at the jail for the last 6 months. Records show crews have been called more than 500 times, only to find things like mattress stuffing, socks, and sandwich bags clogging the line. What option are we going to give them? I'm saying, you know, here's a bucket. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Or how about everything that we find flushed in the toilet down at Metro, you don't get the option of having that thing, like shoes or blankets or plastic bags or potato chips. I think we'll be talking about this story more tomorrow. Fine Bomb on the way next. Y'all have a great one. See you in the AM at 6 for Mobile Mornings.